Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, and we have a packed and really important show for you today. We're going to hear a discussion that took place on January 13th, 1 week after the fascist assault on the Capitol, and with 1 week to go until Trump is no longer president. The participants included author and Yale University philosophy professor Jason Stanley, Andy Z of Refuse Fascism, and Rosie O'Donnell, comedian, actor, and producer. It was moderated by Sansara Taylor, a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Good evening. I want to start by welcoming everybody who is tuned in tonight for a very important roundtable discussion titled Donald Trump and the Whole Fascist Cabal Must Go Now. 1 week ago today, the rolling fascist coup of Donald Trump that had been building for months came to a head in an actual insurrection by armed fascist MAGA mobs who penetrated the U.S. Capitol and brought to a halt the certification of Joe Biden as the next president. Even after they were repelled from the Capitol when the joint session of Congress and the Senate resumed, nearly 150 Republican congresspeople and eight senators still voted to overturn the election. And 1 week later, Donald Trump remains completely unrepentant. This is a very unprecedented situation. So this makes it very important that we're having this discussion tonight. 1 week after this fascist coup attempt, 1 week before the scheduled transition of power, and on the actual evening when Donald Trump became, for the first time in US history, a president who has been impeached two times. So I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'll tell you about myself in the same context as telling you the sponsors of the event. The main sponsor of tonight's discussion is refusefascism.org, and this is broadcasting on all of Refuse Fascism's platforms. Refuse Fascism is a movement forged 4 years ago, right after Trump's election. We have raised the slogan for 4 years, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And we have mobilized people in nonviolent protest with the aim of driving the Trump-Pence fascist regime from power. Tonight's program is also co-sponsored by the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/therevcoms. I'm also very proud to be a co-host of the RNL show. So with that, let me introduce our guests. We have three fantastic guests tonight to have this discussion. Jason Stanley is a professor of philosophy at Yale University. He's also the author of How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Andy Z is the main host of the Revolution Nothing Less show. He is an advocate for the new communism that's been forged by the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. And he is a co-initiator of refusefascism.org. And finally with us tonight, we have Rosie O'Donnell, who is a comedian, an actor, a producer, and is also a very outspoken critic of Donald Trump, who has withstood incredible vitriol from Trump for more than a decade, and it's been awful, but she has never let this silence her, and that matters a great deal. So I'm very happy to welcome all three of you. Hello, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Thanks. An honor to be here with the co-panelists, who I've greatly admired for a long time.
Well, I feel the same. I feel the same, so about all of you. So Rosie, I'm hoping that you would start us off, and I wanted to just take us back 1 week ago when we saw this siege on the Capitol with Confederate flags, with a hangman's gallows, with all the misogyny and hatred for women concentrated in the Proud Boys and the Christian fundamentalist Christian fascist movement that was also part of this, the lies, the conspiracy theory, all of this. When you saw this, just take us to what were you thinking? And how have you been processing this? What have you been thinking about it in the weeks since then?
The first thing I thought was, where the hell are the police? And then at that moment, I knew I hadn't heard Trump's speech that morning, right? I hadn't listened to it. I knew he was saying that that date was going to be, a big date for him and his people. But I never in my wildest dreams imagined what I saw. It gave me panic. Like so many people who suffer with anxiety, it gave me pure panic. And to see our congressmen and senators left unprotected while he held back police and the National Guard and the Army and anyone else who would help is beyond my ability to understand. So how anyone could ever vote not to impeach him in the Senate is mind-blowing. What else do we have this for, if not this exact instance. He should have been arrested the next day. I did a little thing on the internet where I said, you know, I have five kids, and if I told my son no parties this weekend, and I come home on Sunday and the house is a wreck and he invited 1,000 people over and the windows are broken and five people are seriously hurt, do I punish him that night? Or do I wait 7 days while he goes about his life to punish him? It's absurd that we haven't done anything yet.
So following Rosie's comment, I had the, oddly, the opposite reaction. I also suffer from anxiety, but it was a weird moment of calm because it's something I've expected for years. When you have the President of the United States targeting political opponents, calling them illegitimate, claiming that they stole the election, repeatedly calling them un-American, repeatedly associating them with the worst crimes possible, you're going to get a movement, which Donald Trump now has created, a movement of people who think that the his political opponents are traitors.
Right, are 74 million of them.
Yeah, oh, I'm hoping that not all of those 74 million, there's way more than there should be. There's a lot of people who voted for him, but there's a lot of people who become incredibly radicalized by him. And we need to separate those groups. Because when far-right movements are growing across the world right now, they start as extreme radicals. Look at India, Modi, BJP. They started in 1992 as just radicals. No one thought the Hindu nationalists would ever take power. And then now they run the country. So what we have to do is we have to talk to those 74 million people and say, so there's some subgroup of them who are radicalized, who are there. And it's a much larger subgroup than we want it to be.
Yeah, and when they give big announcements that they're going to have 115,000 army men there, I'm thinking that's not going to be enough. You know, you looked at that coverage initially when no one really knew what was going on, and it seemed like it was a couple of hundred people. Well, you look at all the photos that they've released since, it's a staggeringly large amount of people. It's not just the fringe insane. He's radicalized school teachers. He's radicalized people who never would become radicalized. He's no better than a cult leader, and the nation is under its spell, those 74 million people.
I want to bring Andy in here too, and just, I think it's important. We're going to talk, and we should talk about who are the 74 million who voted for him. We should talk about how to sort out their motivations and the questions you guys are posing. But I think it'd be good to also, you know, one, to get Andy, anything you want to say to open up, and then maybe I'll pose a second question.
I think it is important for us to take a deep look at this. This is a seminal moment. This is actually a reckoning that has come, and it's been a long time coming. And even as Jason was calm and Rosie was upset.
Never calm.
Well, I got to say, Josie, just before I make my comment about this, what you have gone through from this pig, Donald Trump, over years and kept your integrity really matters.
Well,
because,
you know,
a lot of people won't stand up to that.
When you grow up on Long Island, as I did, and you're 58 years old, you knew the man was a fake. We grew up knowing that he was a phony, that he had his airlines, you know, repossessed off the runways at LaGuardia. I grew up, if you're a 58-year-old woman in New York, you know he's full of shit. But then when he attacked me with the venom and the cruelty that he did for way over a decade, I knew he was severely mentally ill and untreated. And when he first said he was going to run, I thought, there's no way in God's green earth this man could ever win. And I blame Mark Burnett. I blame the producer of The Apprentice, because he made him believe you could sell a lie to the dummies and the dummies will believe you. And he took that and he ran with it.
Well, that certainly unleashed him as a force, that he was there in some ways beforehand, because coming from New York as well, I do well remember everything that he and his father did, and then especially when the Central Park Five came and he took the New York Times. But what I wanted to say is this, look, this was an extremely dangerous attempt to overthrow an election. It is a fascist coup. Why do I say it's fascist? Because the essence of fascism is a different form of rule of the same system we live under, a much more blatant dictatorship. They were overturning an election. Now, they didn't succeed in the short run. They didn't succeed in the short run, but they did a lot of damage, and they're still dangerous. And here's a couple points I want to just make that might to frame some of this. One, this fascism existed before Donald Trump. There has been growing up in this country, certainly go back to the roots of the country, the revolutionary leader I follow, Bob Avakian, has said that there's a straight line from this right back to the Confederacy. Jason and I have talked about this before in terms of the roots of this in the foundation of this country. The wealth of this country was formed on slavery. Today, it's taken a somewhat different form in not actual slavery, but in this globalized world, you have millions and billions of people around the world who are actually scarcely better than slaves making our garments in Bangladesh and mining the coltan for our phones. And this regime has been brewing for a while. There is a section of people in power who have wanted this program. Starts with Reagan in terms of executive power, but then they come in here and there's a Christian fascist movement that has grown up. That's what Hawley is. Let's be clear. They keep saying in the media that Hawley and Cruz, these are Ivy Leaguers who should know better, but they're just trying to get their positions in power. No, they are opportunists, yeah. But Hawley is one of these Christian fascists, and these people have built up power. We have a Supreme Court that just passed a terrible thing today on abortion rights. Just today, these people are a hardcore and were the center of their movement in the unholy marriage between Mike Pence and Donald Trump. And that's, you saw those shock troops there. And here's my point, I have a lot of other points, but my main point here is this is not going away. These people think there's a different way to rule this country. And you know what? They put it on the line. And I will say this, Bob Avakian wrote about this in June that this was a likely possibility if he didn't win outright. And frankly, without COVID, they would have won. Without COVID, that is part of what unraveled this thing for Donald Trump.
Didn't win because Black people finally said, we've had enough. And they organized in Georgia in a way that has never been before. Thank you, Stacey Abrams. So the people who are oppressed by the system that was built upon their backs, literally, are coming into power. And the old guard doesn't like that. They don't like equality. They don't like all of this. So they're, you know, when you cut off the head of a snake, as Reverend Warnock said the other day, it rattles a while before it dies, right? I'm just afraid there's so many of them. What's going to happen next?
That is a completely legitimate fear. And that is why impeachment is so important. Because every day that Trump validates the lie that the election was fraudulent, he creates a social and political movement built around that lie. And that social and political movement, as we saw today from the Republican Congress, from too many Republican Congress people who would not give it up. Let's remember, so we heard about, there were protests over the summer. Those protests were against police brutality. This terroristic riot was against democracy. The problem is not, things should be nonviolent in a democracy, but the fundamental problem is when you people are allowed to protest democracy, but violent attacks on the seat of democracy.
He said, go fight like hell. He told them what to do. He said he was watching with them and he didn't have the strength to do that because he's a coward. That's why he's the worst of the worst of the worst. And he's an evil, corrupted soul that is really damaged mentally.
None of that is a disqualification, by the way, for being a fascist leader. And look,
I know. And all the people he loves are despots.
But this is important because there's bigger forces behind this and in developments in the overall system, even the economic devastation and the climate devastation has caused there to be upwards approaching 100 million refugees a year. And this has been fueling fascist movements here and around the world. But back to this movement here, they have been saying for some time that they are preparing for a civil war.
Yes.
Now, and here's the point.
We've had the first fight of it. The first fight of it was a week ago.
That is absolutely right, Rosie. And here's a very important point that a failed coup, and it's good that this coup is not going to overturn the election. I can't conceive of that. Although it could be a quite dangerous few days, and who knows what this guy's going to do? He has his finger on the nuclear trigger and is able to do a lot of damage. But assuming Biden becomes president, right? there's still a tremendous danger that a failed coup can become a rallying cry to come to power again through legitimate means or illegitimate means, because the what these people want, they want a different America. They have a different epistemology. Their truth is not true at all. All these things exist. You can't see this going away absent a mass movement, actually, and what forms that takes to continue to push them back every time they raise their head. And then I would say fundamentally, you need a whole different system that doesn't continually spawn this kind of white supremacist, misogynist, patriarchal.
Well, that's who's in charge. That's who's in charge. So of course, that's what they're doing.
But
they're
even
in charge across the globe, everywhere. They're in charge, white old men, and their time is up.
You know, I want to pick up on something Rosie you said early on and Jason said along the way, where Rosie, you mentioned the police did not stop this.
Not only did they not stop it, we witnessed them helping and aiding and abetting. Not all of them, but we witnessed it. They obviously got the word that this was going down, that freaking congresswoman who texted to 1776, you know, at 8:30 in the morning, she texted that to her friends or to the world on Twitter. There are people who knew. It was an inside job. Come on, let's wake up. They didn't just decide to, hey, everybody on our own, let's get down to Washington, D.C. No, let's go listen to our leader tell us exactly what to do. Hurt, maim, kill. Teach them. Get Mike Pence. That's what he told them to do, and that's what they did.
So I wanted to point to the disparity, which a lot of people have pointed to, between the way the police treated this MAGA fascist mob and the way that they treated the Black Lives Matter protesters. I mean, Jason brought this up, and the white supremacy that is actually at the core, both of the history of this country and of this president who has made it, it's at the core of this fascist program he's brought to power. And it's been, you know, manifest in this disparate treatment of people protesting. This is where I feel, you know, I always have a concern when people talk about it as radicalization, absent the content. People standing up for racial justice should not be equated, because they took the streets, as people standing up for a white supremacist fascist coup. So in any case, I think it might be worth it for us to talk a little bit more about the content of what we saw on display and what will remain a threat with or without Trump as the head of state. This the white supremacy that this sprang out of, the hatred of women, which has been a core of this, the cruelty towards immigrants, the disregard to the people of the world. There's actual content here that I think it's probably each of you might want to speak to a little bit.
Take it, Jason.
I think there's some intellectual weapons, basic intellectual weapons, that if you looked at the congressman and congresswomen speaking against impeachment, and are they important to recognize? Here's what they always do. They always say, oh, look, there was some violence and property damage over the summer, but you didn't condemn that. So how can you condemn this? So you're absolutely right. You need to turn to the content. I mean, when what's being protested is police brutality and racism and the massive racial inequality, let's not forget that some important facts. The United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world, comparable to the Soviet Union in the early 1950s. So historians will look back at this time and look at us as a police state. That was being protested over the summer. What were the insurrectionists doing here? What was this terroristic mob doing here? They were attacking democracy. So they try to make you take your eyes off that. And they say, oh, in both cases, there was people breaking things. Well, the content matters. I mean, World War II was people breaking things, but, you know, we're fighting fascists.
Everybody heard that they were killing Black people. Cops are killing Black people at horrendous numbers. But until we witnessed a live murder on television, that's what provided the spark for all of the Black lives. It was George Floyd, and it was his death, his horrible, horrific, cruel, beyond humane. It was just, I was in shock for like 2 weeks. I was traumatized by witnessing a man die in front of our eyes and having a little 16-year-old girl have the guts to tape it all on her iPhone so that we could all see it. That's what's inspired the second civil rights movement here. What inspired this is raw hatred, greed, animosity, sexism, racism, and hatred.
And that's not going to go away.
Yes.
Here's where we got something we have to face up to very starkly. There's going to be, and there can be no reconciliation with fascists,
right,
except on the terms that they set. And this is not a small movement. One of the things we saw is it's up in the Congress. There were Congress people doing things here. We have to do more. There has to be more investigation. It's up into the armed forces. It's into the police forces.
It goes all the way up.
That's right. This is a very strong movement that is attempting to come to power. So the idea that, you know, and I've seen this from many different forces, well, he should be gone and then we can move on and do all these good and wonderful things that we want to have in our agenda. But we're going to have to recognize that there's going to have to be a resolute struggle against this. Because this
they have to be post-Trump amendments to the Constitution, so it can never happen again.
Well,
and that has to start with dark money in politics. Wherever it has to start, it has to start. Because post-Trump, if we don't protect ourselves from this kind of lunacy, again, democracy is over. And we're on the precipice right now. I firmly believe if they don't convict him in the Senate, that Trump has won.
Well, I think that might be true. He has to be convicted. They vote to bar him from holding power. They have to hold these senators accountable and a lot of other people. But I would say this, and this is a topic for even another whole show, but that to actually uproot the danger of this fascism is going to take a completely different system, because things are in an actual revolution. Now, we're not there yet. That's what Sansara and I do on the Revolution Nothing Less show. We're actually organizing now to begin to build the forces to do such a thing. But the reason is, and I think we have to understand just how deep this fascist strain is in this country. And it is a product of the system. It came to power legitimately. I mean, I know we could say the election was rigged and they've been doing gerrymandering and all this, but that's part of the playbook of fascists here and around the world.
They have a long game. They have a long game.
Yes, they do. And
they don't have a long game.
Well, I have a long game, and it is a revolution when we can prepare for it and there's a time for it. But right now there still is an urgent need for people to sign the pledge from Refuse Fascism, which is a beautiful thing that sort of describes this whole world that these people have created in opposition to the whole world that most people, the 81 million people, aspire to. And that's going to form a network of people who will respond to things of this fascist nature as they come up over the next period. We put out a call. I just want to say Refuse Fascism put out a call based on a statement that Bob Avakian had written in August, that we had to vote for Joe Biden, not for an alternate candidate. Jason was on a show with me, we talked about this, to vote him out, but it also required masses of people in the streets so that there was a strength to not allow them to go to do the kinds of extra legal things that he said he was gonna do. And then people were shocked, and too many people said, don't do that. And fascism's an inflammatory word, don't do that. But I'll tell you what, if he steals the election, we'll come out. Did they come out? No, they didn't come out.
No, it is an inflammatory word. I think it's an inflammatory word. I think it's a word that Americans don't digest easy. They don't understand really what it is. And I've said to Sansara since the beginning, 4 years ago, I don't like the name of your group. It's just like the, with the police department when they were trying to defund the police, worst named concept in the world. Second to Refuse Fascism, because I don't think it's a great... I really don't. I think
I will say because we've had this discussion, and I want to hear from Jason on this too. This is, it's an inflammatory word, but it's an inflammatory situation. The big question is not, hear me out. The big question is not, how is it going to make people feel? It's actually, what is it? What are we facing and what's true? Here's an interesting thing. Mitt Romney said he actually made a very important point the night that 1 week ago tonight when they reconvened and everybody was saying, well, the people who are covering, the Republican fascists who are covering their ass to vote to overturn the election by saying, not claiming fraud, but by saying many of my supporters believe there was fraud. Mitt Romney got up and said what needed to be said, at least in this one dimension. He said, you know, if you really want to show respect for those people who believe there was fraud, you would tell them the truth. And that is a point I thought he was right about, this thing that we have to tell people the truth. Now, he does not tell people the truth most of the time. I'm not endorsing Mitt Romney, but I will say, you've always raised to me, Rosie, you didn't like the name, but you also raised to me not long ago, oh my God, you guys were right about this, and I'm so upset. You know, so there's something.
I knew you were right. I knew what he was capable of. He, like, you know, verbally assaulted me for over a decade. I knew the cruelty that was his essence. But I just feel, in order to get a big group, you've been doing it 4 years, and not enough people know who you are or what you do yet. Yeah, and they should, because you're on the right side and you're all three really smart people. And I'm just a comedian who never went to college. But I want more people to adhere to what you're saying and to be able to consume it in a consumable bite for an American. Mm-hmm. You can't be selling caviar to people with a fascist word where they're not going to take it. You got to sell them a McNugget, a Hershey Kiss, something that they can consume.
So let me say why I think I'm not necessarily wedded to the word fascism, Rosie, and I think we need, words matter, as we've learned from this administration and what you've been subjected to. We know that words matter. But here's why it's important to use an inflammatory word. It has to be accurate, because we have to be on the side of truth. And if you give up truth, then you give up, you know, then you're
Agreed.
Playing the game of your opponent.
Agreed.
So let's take the term alt-right, which the media started using. That term, Richard Spencer, the fascist Richard Spencer, came up with that term. It's considered an enormous propaganda win among the far right. It's considered an enormous propaganda win because if you call them alt-right, well, who wouldn't want to be a member of the alt-right? It sounds like a Seattle grunge band. So, you know, they celebrate being called the alt-right. The media wants to use the term populist, but they want to use that word populist because they don't want to say it's about the far right.
I know, but Jason, they didn't say liar for 3 years.
Exactly, precisely.
He lied 1,000 times a month, and they never said the word
liar. Not exactly.
But that's an example of the harm. Hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Let me just finish the point.
Yeah.
So if you use the term fascist. First of all, the fascists know language matters. The fascists don't want to be called fascist. That's one reason to call them fascists. Secondly, if you use the term fascist, you would not have at all been surprised by January 6th. You would have expected January 6th. And if you use the term fascist, you would have known that it's not members of the working class who were just members of the working class that were there. You would have expected a 3-time gold medalist in the Olympics to be there, as he was. Keller, 3-time Olympic swimming gold medalist, was in the middle of the insurrectionist terroristic mob. There were people—
What does that mean to you?
That means—
That he was there, that they've reached and infiltrated into areas of success and commonality in America, that they're no longer just the KKK with hoods?
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we're listening to a discussion that took place on January 13th. The participants included author and Yale University philosophy professor Jason Stanley, Andy Z of Refuse Fascism, and Rosie O'Donnell, comedian, actor, and producer.
Fascism means the KKK was fascist, and the KKK crossed classes. It means that there's going to be a lot of middle class people there. There's going to be rich people there. It's not a class movement. It's an ideological movement that is based on racism, that is based, as no one needs to tell you better than this, Rosie, on sexism, horrific violence against women, as your case as an alarm bell rang across our nation. So if you use the term fascism, the concept of fascism, then you know it's not a bunch of survivalists who are just anxious about losing their jobs. You know it's going to draw in people of all walks of life, who feel that the communists are going to take over their country, who feel love for the leader. So fascism leads you to expect a coup, and it leads you to recognize that this is the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end.
I really think this is important. Just let me say a couple of things, Rosie, that we do be accurate whether or not we have to go up against how people perceive things. You know, there's a problem in this country. People are not, they don't pay attention to, why not? Because they have a lot of goodies, to be honest, and they believe in a mythology of America as a shining city on a hill. America is different. We're the good guys. All this kind of stuff is blinds people to the reality. They don't want to hear fascism because people said, they said it to refuse fascism. They said it to Jason Stanley. They said it to the scholar Ruth Ben-Ghiat. They said, you can't say that. You shouldn't say that because it's going to turn people off. We talked to a congressperson, Sansara and I did, 4 years ago, and he said, I actually agree with you, but you can't say that because it's going to turn people off. I said, well, if you don't say that and then make the argument, make the case, people are going to be deluded into saying, they were saying it can't happen here on Tuesday of last week, okay? Tuesday of last week. And then Wednesday, they saw this. And so this is why it matters. There's a lot of mythology in this country that, you know, I know you said you're 58, I'm older than that, but I think we're both of generations where we've had to learn the truth about America compared to what we learned when we were in grade school and junior high. Okay.
I just want to say I'm 40 and I've been 40 for 11 years.
Okay. Well, I'm 39, you know, like Jack Benny, but speaking of comedians, but okay. But then, you see what I'm saying, Yossi, you have to speak the truth to people, and then you have to be
I'm all for the truth. I just wish that fascism wasn't a word that America doesn't really understand and associates with Nazis and feels like it's a vague somewhere, something else word. I just want something meaty that they can bite their teeth into, like democracy is dying right now in America. We have to wait until the 18th or whatever, the 19th, for that asshole Mitch McConnell to decide what he's gonna do. Isn't that the worst human who's ever lived next to Donald Trump? Mitch McConnell.
He's got a lot of competition. I mean, he's pretty bad, but so is Mike Pence. So is these people. All of these are despicable fascists. That's what they are. And they ought to. And what is a fascist? Let's just get right down on this. These fascists believe, as Jason said, you said white supremacy. They're misogynists, and that encompasses this anti-LGBTQ whole set that was part of forging their movement. They're xenophobes. They hate foreigners. They want to blame foreigners. And what's his foreign policy? It's called America First. That goes back to Lindbergh.
Let's be careful, Andy, because we want people to have the intellectual weapons that will enable them to respond to objections. There are Black Proud Boy members.
Yes.
There are immigrant Proud Boy members.
I'll interject that there's a very worthwhile book by the scholar Claudia Kuntz called Mothers in the Fatherland. It was about the women who were part of the Nazi party. That was a viciously misogynist party and movement and form of rule, but there were women who were part of it. Having Black members doesn't mean it's not white supremacist. Let me pose a question. I'd like to pose a question, which I think is, look, I think the discussion on fascism really matters. I'm also responsible for watching the clock and thinking about what we need to discuss. Here's something that overlaps, which is that Andy brought this up and Rosie, you responded to it. And I think it might be worth pursuing this. In America, there has been a real resistance of the decent people to get out of their comfort zone. And you have right now, the streets are dominated by these fascist MAGA thugs who are taking all kinds of initiative, have all kinds of certitude, all of this. And there's millions, there's more people who objected to this, more people who voted against it. And yet they are passive now, and they have been largely for the last 4 years.
They're scared to death.
That's a big part of it. I think we should talk about this some, because I believe very firmly, and I think this is something probably everybody here shares, that on Wednesday, we saw a price that was paid a week ago today for these 4 years of accommodating and letting Trump shatter norms, commit atrocities, and then they get normalized one after the other, after child separation, after the impeachment where he wasn't acquitted and he wasn't convicted and he thought he was above the law, after the border wall and all of these things that he's done along the way. the Muslim ban. Each time he shatters norms, people are shocked, they make a little noise, and then they go back to living their comfortable lives. And to me, this is part of what paved the road. Obviously, the fascists themselves spearheaded this coup, but it's been enabled by passivity and accommodation. And
well, there's also a pandemic. There's a pandemic. People were afraid to go out. I think there were a lot of protests considering, you know, there was Black Lives Matter was, I think, hugely successful protests and warranted, and more needs to be done. But when the other side does exactly what they did last week, and we all see it, beating up officers with a flag, an American flag, killing people were killed there. I mean, I think the violence that is yet to come is terrifying.
Yeah.
You bring out a couple of very important points, and I think that Sansara's point is very important, because people have accommodated and normalized and found themselves even complicit in collaborating with the regime. And this is why I made the point about you can't reconcile with these fascists except on their terms. And we have to confront this. There's actually, you know, people have said, here is something the liberal media said, Trump is dividing us. The country is already divided. There are really two sets of reality, two sets of truth, just if Fox, and now there's people even more lunatic than that who are, you know, in terms of television and what these people consume, there's two different societies within this one country, and they're not going to reconcile. The question for our side is, how do we do things safely? How do we protest safely? Mm-hmm. I will say this, all the statistics I read in reports is that the Black Lives Matter movement at its height in June, July, when things were really at a very vicious point in New York, people were mainly safe distance, they had masks, and there was no super spreader out of it that could be documented.
There was no big spike, yeah.
There was no big spike. Then this is, there are ways to do this, but the real question is what you raised, Rosie. People are afraid of these people.
Yes.
And there's reason to be afraid, but there's also reason to, at a certain point, you have to actually stand up to it. And that's what happened in Germany. That's what happened in Turkey more recently. You, at a certain point, you have to figure out, how does our side get organized, not with the same means and methods as them, but not directly confronting them. Everything we've tried to call has been, you know, not to go head to head. And I don't actually think that's a winning strategy. I know there's people who are very dedicated anti-fascists who think that the way to do this is to go, you know, punch a fascist in the face. I don't think that deals with it, because the problem is much is up here. And I think this mass nonviolent protest is what we needed to do. And we probably are still going to need to do again in the future. And we have to figure out how to mobilize like that. Because people forgot what they accomplished in that Black Lives Matter movement in the spring. And it's now I'm a little nervous that it's been turned into a kind of NGO demand kind of thing instead of actually, and I don't think it's going to really uproot this oppression of Black people. Because by the way, George, that was a horrific tape. But I was stunned and upset by Tamir Rice. You did see it.
You didn't see his face.
You're right. It didn't have that.
Look into the eyes of a man saying he can't breathe and watch the life choked out of him by an arrogant Aryan poster boy on his neck.
It was the watching the cruelty consciously drawn out. I want to bring Jason in. I know he's had his finger up for a minute here. So Jason, go ahead.
Just a few points on the previous discussion, with which I'm in sympathy. First of all, about the degree of normalization. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do some analysis here. First of all, degree of normalization. And think about in July, when Vanity Fair published a report about Jared Kushner's task force on COVID. And it was reported as a matter of public debate that they gave up any national strategy because they concluded it was just Democratic run states and cities that were facing the crisis with COVID. Could you imagine that coming out, that they decided, okay, COVID's not a problem because it only affects Democrats? Think about the effects of COVID on indigenous populations and Black populations by a clearly politicized decision. Public health has not been a concern at all. It's already in the public debate that they just completely politicized this and no one cared. So that's a point on normalization. It's not that no one cared, it's just we've been overwhelmed. We've been overwhelmed. The RNC, they just had the RNC at the White House. In the late 1990s, Al Gore had a big Hatch Act thing because he made one phone call of a campaign donor with a campaign donor from his vice presidential office. They had the whole RNC at the White House. So the level, the normalization history shows us how this normalization works, and all the more important that we get there's accountability, because the normalization, the more you allow this to happen, the more people normalize and the more people are saying, what are you saying? What happened to Rosie? It is shocking that the person who did that to Rosie is president of the United States. It is shocking. Much less the other things, but
with impunity.
With impunity.
And, you know, he would go on David Letterman and make horrible jokes. I was a degenerate and everybody would laugh. And, you know, I was like, this is America. This is shocking to me.
Yeah.
And it was you, Rosie, but it was actually every
woman. Yes, woman. Of course it was.
Yes. And so this is where, you know, look, I think there has been normalization.
Unquestionably normalization.
Yeah. Pardon me? There has been.
I think. It's
You're right. It was a very mild statement I just made. Let me amend it. There's been way too much normalization. I guess here's what I wanted to pose by my brain was ahead of my words. So what I wanted to pose is, in the face of this, given that this, everything that gave rise to this, Donald Trump, the fascism, the white supremacy, the rewarding, not just impunity, but the rewarding the misogyny, the rewarding the white supremacy, the rewarding and putting this in the halls of power. And now it's entrenched in the courts. It's in the Senate. It's in the Congress. Yes, Trump should be impeached and removed. That will matter, but it is still going to be in every realm of the institutions of power, not consolidated fully, but vying, and a huge movement of many millions organized around this, our side, with diverse voices, diverse perspectives, but our side is going to have to find the ways to overcome fear and uncertainty. And I think this is where, and to make our desire for a different future known and felt, there actually are the numbers of people if they were to act. And this is where I think one of the things that Andy said about people don't even realize, they forget what they accomplished over the summer in those mass protests for Black Lives, how they inspired the world, how they changed the thinking of millions, how they reversed who had initiative and momentum in society. That was a period when the Trumpies were on the defensive and Trump himself. So I think maybe in our closing remarks, if there's the theme of this roundtable, Trump and the whole fascist cabal must go. Accountability, but also what is the message to people to help them find their strength and courage to overcome that fear, the intimidation, all of this, because it matters. It really matters in the name of humanity, for all of humanity, that we refuse to accept a fascist America. So that's, I know, Jason, you should probably go first. I know you got to log off and then we could hear from others as well.
First of all, I want to say that mass protests are extremely important, but I want to give some credence to the fear. There's a lot of guns and we can't have violence, and everything will be taken out of context. Any moment of misbehavior will be taken as an excuse for incredible violence back. Famous quote from the Nazi era, not to make direct comparisons, but famous quote from the Nazi era, a nurse said, Victor Klemperer reports, a nurse said she could always tell the communists from the Nazis because the Nazis had lumps in their head and the communists had stab wounds through their lungs. So it's, as we saw, fascist insurrection is much more violent, and they will use so we have to remain nonviolent, and we have to be organized in numbers, in nonviolent protests and strikes, if that's called for, and in numbers secondly, there's a concept that Timothy Snyder calls anticipatory obedience. There has been way too much anticipatory obedience, Anticipatory obedience means when you're frightened and you look ahead and guess at what behavior will be punished and don't do it in advance, okay? We've seen the newspapers do that. We've seen institutions do that. We've seen everyone do that. They're afraid of any consequences, so in advance, they obey. No anticipatory obedience. If the behavior is gonna be faced with violence, well, let's face it together, but let's not obey in advance.
Great.
Well, yeah, I think that's important because we have been through a situation where, as Sansara walked this through, where the outrage of the day isn't opposed in the way it needs to be, and then it becomes the new normal. And the political space gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So for now, since November 6th, since the election, we have had a serious attempt to overturn the results of this election, and people were relatively passive, only cheering on courts and hoping that it would change. There, if you had had an aroused population, this would have been a different thing. But now we are. So now we actually do have to confront what it is that we faced. I think that people should do some, they should do their homework if they don't know, and we should do well at popularizing terms that we think are accurate and speak in ways that people can understand, and what they don't know, they need to know. Look, you know, when somebody comes to you, not to you, but to somebody and says, hey, you got lymphoma, you say, well, that's a big word and it's scary. You want, if you actually have it, you want to know what it is. And it makes a difference if you know what it is. Fascism is a real thing. It describes a certain form of rule of this system. People need to know what that is, but we're not going to win this by definitions, but we are going to win it by people seeing what they're facing and then acting in response to it and becoming, trusting each other to actually understand there comes a time when you do have to put something on the line. I think, you know, a lot of people were very moved by the slogan, you know, good trouble from the late congressman. But too few people actually want to do what he did. Too few, if they didn't march across that Pettus Bridge, we would not be having the same conversation today. That bridge had to be crossed knowing that you were going right into the maw of those KKK state troopers. They did that, they knew what they were facing and they had to do it. And there come times in history when that's what's required. And we've just passed through one. We probably have a bit of a respite now, a bit of a, with the Biden election. But those who are saying this is all behind us are not paying attention and do not know what's really, we're still facing all this. Otherwise, we would just fold up, refuse fascism and say, hey, you know, we won, Biden's in, it's all over. It's not all over. We have to continue to be organized and overcome our fear, overcome our doubts with each other. And that's why one thing we want to do right now in terms of refuse fascism is have a lot more programs like this. You know, if it wasn't for COVID, we'd try to fill some halls with discussion with people and debates. And you know, we have to have one big argument. And I would say we need a big argument around the question of reform and revolution as well. That's what we try to do on our show. We want to have a lot of people on who disagree with us because we have to get to what we're really facing. When you're fighting blind, and it's very hard to win. And all we have going for us is the reality that we face, which is not good. It's really bad. It's existential for humanity. The planet could be destroyed and life on it could be destroyed even without with the damage that this fascist regime has done. People need to face that reality and act. You know, everybody loves Greta, but nobody listens to Greta. Okay, in terms of what she's saying has to be done. Not saying nobody listened to her, but the kind of thing she was calling for around the environment. We have to actually face the reality we have, and there's a scientific way to look at it. That's what Bob Avakian's been working on. That's what they'll find on revcom.us. And people should go to refusefascism.org and sign the pledge, form networks, have discussion. Let's debate this stuff out. Let's find a lot of different forms for doing it. And I happen to believe that comedians have a very important, I mean, you're also a great actor, but comedians have a very important role. I will tell you this, I go back and watch Carlin all the time and, you know, and Richard Pryor and people who found the ways to speak truth in ways that people weren't ready to hear that truth, but through humor, they were able to actually get people to confront that reality.
David Steinberg, who was on Nixon's enemy list. Mm-hmm. You know, he would go and tell the truth on TV on The Tonight Show, and in the middle of all of that Watergate. And, you know, he was, you know, comedians, artists will do their job. There's going to be musicals written and songs and paintings. And I mean, it's such a turbulent time. And I just, I can't bear the anxiety of it all. I really can't. It hurts my heart. And, you know, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I hope that you'll consider a name change at one point in your career.
Well, I hope that we can, while we debate the name and that we can stand together in this and continue to discuss. And it matters that you came on this show. It matters that you've talked and tweeted things over the last period. Jason, we've been on many programs together. I think we're going to have to do many more. And I look forward to when we get past this COVID, we can have some more mass debates among students in different sections of the people. We face a horrific situation in the world right now. And we need to find the solutions, that it's not just going to go away. It's only going to go away if people act consciously on it. And that's what we're here for in our show. That's what Refuse Fascism is here for. That's why you've all come and been part of this. And Sarah, I just have to say, you did a great job managing us. We're an unruly bunch.
Yeah, especially me. I apologize for that.
No.
It's been a joy and a pleasure. Let me say, it's been a joy and a pleasure. And frankly, we need a lot more unruliness on our side in the good sense. And I just wanted to go back. I want to appreciate each of you and all of you coming together for this discussion. I want to go back to the very first things that were said about Rosie, the sense of panic and anxiety you felt a week ago, which I think speaks for tens of millions of people in this country and many more around the world. And what Jason said about the sense of calm, because it was actually completely predictable, not every detail of it, but that a fascist coup was underway. Pardon me?
He announced it. He kept saying.
Exactly.
On January 6th, it's happening. Where the hell is the FBI?
He's always been announcing his plans. This is straight from the literature on fascism. Authoritarians always tell you what you're going to do. I listen to all his rallies. He's always told you what he's going to do. He's going to steal the election. He's going to announce on election day and the night of election day that he won. He was expecting to have a large enough lead that by the election day night, because he said it in his rallies many times, he promoted COVID denialism. He was hoping to win on election day. The people who showed up, Biden had a huge lead among absentee ballots, mail-in voters, and he's hoping to attack and destroy and mail-in voting and discredit it. But fortunately, Biden had a large enough lead by the end of election day that he couldn't do it. Plan A didn't work. All of this Trump said repeatedly, out loud, in his rallies, and no one believed him.
Rosie believed. I think everybody on this call believed.
Right.
What I wanted to say,
the media did not. And that
What I wanted to say is, I wanted to bring those two things together: the sense of panic for good reason, feeling and reflecting what is actually at stake for lives here and around the world in a fascist coup and a fascist danger that has not gone away, and the listening to what they are actually saying. Donald Trump told us this movement is just beginning. He said that since this coup attempt, and with or without him, the people behind him, the movement that is built, the tens of millions organized as Christian fascists, the white supremacist movement, the broader social base, and there's all the way up into the structures of power, have made clear they are not going away. And so we should listen to that, and we should not dull our sense of, When I'm referencing the panic, I know you were talking about a sense of anxiety, but I'm also speaking of it in the sense of having our humanity intact and what's at stake, and not dulling ourselves to that, and hearing what they're saying, and then working together.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much. Keep doing the good work, smart people.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Keep standing strong.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we've been listening to a discussion that took place on January 13th. The participants included author and Yale University philosophy professor Jason Stanley, Andy Z of Refuse Fascism, and Rosie O'Donnell, comedian, actor, and producer. If you want to see a video of the discussion we just aired, go to YouTube and check out the channel, The RevComs. All right, now, before we go, I'd like to make a couple of recommendations. First, there's an article on RevCom.us about the defeated fascist coup, the battle still raging, and the way forward out of this madness. It goes into what happened, why, the situation we're still facing, and what we have to do together. For all of you who are shaken, upset, infuriated, anguished, and kept awake at night by the magnitude of the fascist movement that has been mobilized in the U.S. and the system that put Trump in power, you need to check this out. That's The Defeated Fascist Coup, The Battle Still Raging, and The Way Forward Out of This Madness at RevCom.us. Once again, that's Rev, R-E-V, as in Victor, com, C-O-M, dot us. So it's RevCom.us, okay? All one word, okay? Now, I also want to recommend a recent online program from Revolution Books New York. America's torture colony, Guantanamo, must be closed now. This program can now be found on the YouTube channel, Revolution Books NYC. Revolution Books NYC. Andy Worthington, British journalist and co-founder of Close Guantanamo, spoke from the UK about the horror of the Guantanamo detention camp and the courage and humanity of prisoners who have died, those who have been released, and those who have resisted for years. Andy was joined by Shelby Sullivan Bennis, a lawyer for several Guantanamo prisoners and victims of U.S. drone strikes outside war zones. In January 2002, President George W. Bush set up the military prison within Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba. The vast majority of those held there from its very beginning were picked up without any incriminating evidence. Guantanamo Prison is a shameful icon of torture, including waterboarding and of indefinite detention without charge or trial. It violates basic human rights and has been a vital tool of U.S. imperialism's war without end in the Middle East, Central Asia, and parts of Africa. Andy recently sent these thoughts to Revolution Books in New York City. After four long and horrible years in which Donald Trump essentially sealed Guantanamo shut, the arrival in the White House of Joe Biden offers a glimmer of hope that prisoners' releases will resume and that there will be a movement towards the eventual closure of the prison. However, as with Obama, it may well be a struggle to get the administration to prioritize the expenditure of political capital doing what is right and necessary. Andy Worthington is a writer and musician who, since 2006, has tirelessly exposed the barbarous conditions of Guantanamo and brought to public attention the stories of those who have been detained there and those who have died there. You can follow Andy at closeguantanamo.org.